Contrary to popular belief, most guys with man breasts cannot just bench press their way to perfect pecs. They have a medical condition called gynecomastia, and Dr. Frank Lista of the Plastic Surgery Clinic can help. A world-renowned plastic surgeon, Dr. Lista has perfected the procedure for correcting gynecomastia. Find out more at theplasticsurgeryclinic.ca. Get off the bench and into the game. Theplasticsurgeryclinic.ca.
We couldn't find anyone angry enough in Toronto to fill in for Jeff Blair, so we looked to the Wild West. Here's Ryan Pinder on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Good morning to you. Ryan Pinder in for Jeff Blair. Busy show, as always. Buck Martinez is going to join us in about 90 seconds. I want to take your calls on a topic that I think there's going to be no right answers. You know, yesterday we threw it to the phone lines. If you could only have Patrick Kane or Jonathan Toews, who would you take? And as good as Patrick Kane is as a hockey player, and he's phenomenal, everyone was on the Toews wagon. I don't know that we had one call for Kane. This is going to be a more scattered set of results on the phones, I'm sure. Who's the favorite in the AL East now? Clearly, we've seen all these teams have warts, holes in their lineups, areas of concern, and some things that they do well. No one is good in the AL East at this point. No one's running away with this division. The top record is 3 games over .500, and the Yankees hold it, and they're just off a stretch where they lost 10 of 11. They've won three since, but they'd lost 10 of 11. So clearly there is not a dominant club in here, or at least at this juncture of the season, no one's looked dominant. So I want to know who you think right now, May 28th. It's the 8th today, 20th. I love it when I know what day it is. That's awesome. Who's favorite? Who does Vegas like? Who do you like? Why? By the way, the Jays out of the basement. They're now tied with the Red Sox for four spot in the AL East. Also, we want to check in with Peter Labardius before the end of the hour. Memorial Cup continues in Quebec City, and we have to get into this. Apparently, FIFA is corrupt. This is unbelievable stuff. Next thing you know, we're going to find out that fast food isn't good for you. So we'll check in with Dan Wetzel of Yahoo to talk about that. But right out of the gate, we go to Buck Martinez, the television play-by-play voice of your Toronto Blue Jays. Good morning, Buck.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm very well. I really enjoyed yesterday at the park. It's not often we see matinees in Toronto. I would love to see more of them. I understand why they don't, because only 15,000 fans showed up, although it was a late scheduling change. And yet there where the matinee was, looming large as a sunball, seemed to be the difference.
Yeah, it was an unfortunate set of circumstances. The clouds came and went, and unfortunately right there for Carrera, it was the brightest day, brightest part of the day, and he lost that ball in the sun. And, you know, Estrada pitched well again, and it's just unfortunate. That's the way the ball bounces sometimes. And, you know, overall, I think it was a pretty good homestand, 5-5 on the homestand, but now they got to go out and play some tough teams in their own ballpark.
You're right. I think all the losses on the homestand before yesterday were one-run variety. They'd lost 2 of 3 to Seattle that way, 2 of 4 to the Angels that way. And yesterday, if that ball doesn't get caught in the sun on a windy day, they might have won this thing before even extras, because those two runs seemed to loom large as the game went on. The Sox only got one after that.
Yeah, it was certainly a difference in the ballgame. And it was a routine fly ball. And you know, Carrera catches that 9 times out of 10, and even with dealing with the sun, but that one just got lost in the sun, and it was an unfortunate break for Marco, and an unfortunate break for the Blue Jays.
Interesting watching what John Gibbons did with his lineup yesterday, trying to keep his best hitters in late and shuffling guys around defensively. I never thought I'd see Russell Martin at second base.
You know what, I thought I might see it the night before when Russell pinch hits and there was a chance that they could tie it up. And I think that's what prompted them to make all those moves. Russell's played there before. He's played in the outfield, and he's played in the infield, and he's a very good athlete, obviously. So I thought it was a great move just to keep him in the game. It was a tight game. He didn't want to lose his bat. And, you know, there's a lot of versatility on this team, so they were able to keep Russell in the ballgame and actually made a nice play on that little force out of second.
Yeah, and he was, of course, lobbying to play for, what, Canada at shortstop a while ago at an international event as well. So you're right. It's not totally foreign. It's just crazy to see him, the big beard and the guy you're used to seeing crouch behind the plate playing second.
Yeah, he, like I said, he can handle anything, and I thought it was a good move by John to keep his bat in the lineup.
Marco Estrada, you mentioned it, a solid performance. Those runs that come out of the sky are earned runs, which I think is a crime against humanity. I mean, that's a fly ball out for sure, but, you know, that's the way I suppose the game is ruled. Why has he been able to have success as a starter when so many doubted at the beginning of the year he could? His splits were better as a reliever in Milwaukee.
Yeah, he was, and the thing that's and now working in his favor is he's starting to gain his stamina. He sprained his ankle in spring training and missed about 2 weeks, so that set him back. And I think the only way he could build up was to pitch out of the bullpen, and he's done that. And he's a terrific guy, a hard worker, and a guy that puts a lot of time into it. But you know, I think if he holds the opponents down to three runs, he's going to win more often than not with this offense. But, you know, he's done a nice job. And to his credit, you know, he was patient. He waited for his opportunity, and he's made the most of it now.
Has Josh Donaldson exceeded your expectations?
No. He's a great player. He's a baseball player. He understands that there are situations where you have to, your focus has to be even more keen, and you have to step up and get big hits. And he's talking baseball all the time. He's on the bench talking baseball, talking situations, you know, and he has fun playing. It's a game that should be enjoyed. And I think he likes the process. He loves the attention. He likes to get up there and go head-to-head with the toughest pitchers in baseball. But he's been a great acquisition. And, you know, I think he's done what we anticipated. This guy's been in the MVP discussion the last 2 years, and he's been in the postseason, and that's where he wants to go this year. So he brings an awful lot, not only what he does on the field, but the subtleties of letting everybody know that, like he said before, he said, this isn't the try league. This is the get-it-done league. And when you have more guys like that on your team, eventually it's going to happen.
How many guys are there like that on a typical team? I think you'd probably put Russell Martin in the same category in terms of a guy that thinks it really well, is always, you know, batting to the scoreboard in terms of where runners are on, how many outs there are. Not a lot of guys are real good at that, especially some of the teams of years past here have accused of not being real smart and fundamentally sound. Is it rare to see two guys like this, or is there usually a bunch on teams that win?
Well, Ryan, I think the thing that there's a problem is that it has been less important to win. You know, years ago when the World Series share was more than most people's full salary, I think it was imperative that you won, because you know, guys would make more money during the postseason than they did during the regular season. But that's not the case anymore, obviously. And I think it's hard. You really have to identify guys that come with that sense of pride to win. And I think you know, now the Blue Jays are adding some of those guys, and it's important that you have those guys. In this day and age, it's more important than ever, because everybody's making nice money. Everybody's very comfortable financially. But you have to get a core, and I think that's why homegrown talent is such a premium. When you get the guys that grew up in the organization, that have played in your organization, that have friends on the team, I think they're always going to push a little bit harder.
It's interesting because you look at free agency too, and guys aren't afraid to take huge dough and go to franchises that aren't tremendously successful. What you just talked about years ago, how money was handed out differently, you probably would be a little more hesitant to go to teams that didn't look like they were going to win.
Absolutely, you would, because that was the only way you made any extra money. You know, people are going to think this is silly, but when I came into the major leagues, I made $10,000. We got $8,500 in 1976 for losing in the American League Championship Series. That was more than half of my salary. So, you know, it was a motivation. You know, you wanted to win. You didn't want to let your teammates down. But, you know, like I said, it's just the finances of the game, and you really have to develop a team full of character guys. And I think when you look at the teams that win, there was a core. And even the Yankees, they got away from the core four, and they haven't had success since they got away from those homegrown foundation players. And you have to have those players in your lineup and those types of guys that are going to challenge other players on the team to strive to win. And that's when you're going to have the best combination.
So you made $10,000 with an $8,000 bonus in what year?
It was 1976. Actually, I made $16,076. Made $10,069 my first year. We won the division championship. We played the Yankees in the playoffs. We got $8,500 as our losing share of the championship series.
Do you shake your head when you see the numbers being thrown around? You know, Russell Martin, there's a good catcher. $60, $70 million. Does that stun you, are you numb to it now?
I'm really pleased with players. Fought to have things right, and now the players are making good money, and they're getting probably even a lower share of the total revenues than they had at one point. But I don't begrudge any of the players a cent that they make. They earn it. It's hard work. And I do take pride in the fact that my group of players that started in the 60s and played through the 70s and 80s stood up for a lot of things that were wrong at the time, and now they have the finances in their favor, and it's a good thing for the players.
Is that reciprocated? Do today's players understand the sacrifices that your generation of players made?
I don't know. It's hard to. When you get your paycheck every 2 weeks, you say, well, I'm doing pretty good.
Yeah. I think their paycheck every 2 weeks is bigger than your salary in 76.
Oh, much bigger.
Wow. Be nice to just trade checks, put them all in a pile. We'll just pull checks today, see who gets whose. Oh, I got the baseball players.
Whenever I think of that and people ask me, what do I think about the money today, I always think about Willie Mays. What do you think Willie Mays would be making today in his prime? So I don't begrudge a nickel for any players that have played. I'm proud of them. I think they're the greatest athletes in the world, and they earn every nickel that they get.
Tell me about where you're at on this team, because it's a 5-5 homestand and there's so many things to feel positive about, and yet there's still these looming, nagging spots of the roster or maybe the team's composition that people aren't sure if they're going to iron out. Where are you at after this 10-game homestand?
Well, you know, when you look at the number of games, they've played 49 games, and, you know, you get there 60, 65, 70 games, then you have an idea. And if you look at this division, everybody's in flux. Tampa Bay got hot for a while, and now they've lost five in a row. The Yankees cooled off. Now they've won three in a row. I think it's going to be like this most of the season. You know, you look at the Red Sox, and they're talking about moving Kelly to the bullpen, and Sandoval's talking about stopping his switch hitting, and, you know, everybody has problems. Everybody has concerns. I don't think the Blue Jays are unique in that regard, but the one thing that's been encouraging on this homestand is since they pushed everybody back an extra day, starting on Victoria Day, they had that start from Todd Redmond. Everybody else has responded well. They pitched very well. So that's where it all starts, and that's where it all ends, on the mound with the starting pitchers. And I think they have pitched well the last couple of times through the rotation. So they need to continue that on this road trip, because they're going into Minnesota, where the Twins are 17-6 at home. And then they go into Washington, where the Nats are 14-7 at home. So it's going to be a tough road trip. They have to pitch well and come up with some big hits.
Yeah, and you hope Jose can play the outfield in Washington, or that roster, or the lineup will certainly be depleted. No more DH, no more tinkering around with guys. You need both Edwin and Jose's bats in the lineup if you're going to win.
I would count on Bautista playing in right field on Monday against the Nationals.
Osuna didn't have his greatest performance last night, and maybe we should have expected it. It's his first year in the league. It was the fourth time in 5 days he was asked to pitch, and he's been almost perfect. This is not a sport of perfect. Even the best get nicked up and dinged here or there.
No question. And you know, he has far exceeded anybody's expectations. You know, those runs he gave up yesterday were the first runs he's allowed since April 27th, so it's been a month. And you go a month without allowing the runs, I'll take that guy every single day. But he's terrific. He's a very good young man. He's bright. He's articulate. He understands his situation. It's hard to fathom that he didn't turn 20 until the 7th of February. But he's a pretty special young man, and I think the Blue Jays are fortunate to have him.
Yeah, he's pitched against men in Mexico for a huge portion of his life as a youngster. I think 16 or 17, he was playing in a men's league. Do you see him as a starter long-term, or do you like where he's at in the bullpen?
You know what? I think he's the type of guy that could do anything. I think he could start. I think he could close. When you look at the combination of fastball changeup, I mean, that's about all you need as a closer. And Glenn Hoffman did it for, Trevor Hoffman did it for a long time with the Padres. And, you know, he's probably going in the Hall of Fame. But this is a very talented young man. And the biggest thing that he does, he commands his fastball. And when you can do that, you can pitch in a lot of different situations. And I think the Blue Jays, you know, I don't think they're ready to make any dramatic move with him. I think they're going to let this season play out and see where he's at the end of the season. But I could see him as a closer, and I could see him as a starter as well.
Nice to have that option at least, right?
Yes, it is.
Talented kid. At his age, doing what he's doing is awfully impressive. Final one for you, Buck, and we're going to open up the phone lines here. We've got people waiting already to weigh in on it. Today, May 28th, 2015, who's the favorite to win the AL East?
Oh, I don't know that you could identify anybody right now because you look at the situation, like I said, you know, the Yankees are old. They have inconsistent starting. They are going to get Tanaka back probably within a week. Tampa Bay, they got devastating news, and then they just lost James Loney to an injury as well, but not having Cobb back. Smiley is going to be questionable all year long. I think the Orioles have a good team, but I don't know if they have enough pitching. And, you know, like we said with the Blue Jays, we're still missing some parts, and obviously Navarro will have an impact as a bat. But, you know, it seems as though there are too many first baseman DH types on this team, and I think that might be an adjustment that Blue Jays might want to make. The Red Sox, I'm not certain what they're going to do. Yeah. Bring in all those free agents from the outside, and like I said before, they don't have the same affinity, the same dedication to the Red Sox as some of those guys like Pedroia and Ortiz that have been there for a long time. So I don't know what's going to happen with the Red Sox.
It's weird because they were, what, the de facto favorites at the beginning of the year just because of all those massive signings and trades over the offseason?
You know what happens? You can't tell what the chemistry is like in that clubhouse when you bring in all those mercenaries. They sign those big contracts and you put all those numbers together, and it plays well in fantasy, but it doesn't necessarily play well in a 162-game season.
Well, they're tied with the Blue Jays right now at four games back of the division lead. It is wide open. Buck, enjoy whatever dregs of the off day you have here, and then we look forward to the broadcast from Minnesota tomorrow.
All right, great to be with you. Have a good day.
Thank you. That is Buck Martinez, the television play-by-play voice of your Toronto Blue Jays, of course, on Sportsnet. And it leads us exactly where we're going to spend some time on the phones. We've got Russ in New Jersey set to join us. Do you believe that this Jays team is a favorite to win in the AL East? Do you think there's another team that everyone should be looking at, or is this a complete dog's breakfast? Russ, are you there?
I'm here.
Talk to me about this Jays group. Do you think they're a favorite to win this division or not?
You know what? I wish I could say yeah, and, you know, as long as you're in it, you can win it. But the bottom line is, you know, this team, the pitching has been poor. You look at it, they haven't won four games where they have scored five runs or less. Four games where they've scored five runs or less. That means unless they're scoring seven or eight runs, they're not winning ball games. Even go back to last year, I think they won more than four games scoring three runs or less. So the pitching hasn't been there. Some team is going to go on a run in this division. I don't know who it is. It could be Tampa with the pitching they have. You know, their bats could get hot for a couple weeks. Are they a great hitting team? No, but their bats can get hot for a couple weeks. But some team is going to go 15-5 and 16-4. 16-4. Can the Blue Jays be that team? I wish I could say yes, but at this point, I just don't see it. It's either the pitching is off. The offense is obviously, as I keep on saying, very, very explosive, but it's not consistent. That means they'll score three runs, and the next time they'll score nine runs, and it averages to six. So everyone says, oh, they have the best offense in the league. Look, they've scored the most runs in the league. You have to look at it, you know, if you look game by game, they're scoring, you know, there's plenty of games they're scoring 3-2, and then they're scoring 10, and they probably have the most multiple, you know, double-digit run, you know, games in the American League this year. But like I said, they've scored about 29 or 30 times this year, you know, four runs or less. So it's I wish I could say, yeah, and this is the year to win the division because there's nobody any good, but they're going to have to go on a nice run, and, you know, I hope we have the pitching to do that.
Thanks, Russ. So here's the run that they've got coming up. Three at Minnesota. They then have a interleague set at Washington for three games, and then they come home, three against Houston, three against Miami. Now, if you're looking at the schedule at the beginning of the year, you're thinking that, oh, they're six games at home, Houston, Miami, that should be very winnable. Well, Houston's been really good. Miami is not. And as Buck pointed out, the Twins might not be world beaters, but they're good on their turf, which is where the games are going to be played coming up starting tomorrow. Let's continue on the phone lines. This division is not pretty, says John from Whitby. How are you?
Hello.
What's going on?
Thanks for taking my call. This division's a dog's breakfast. It could be any one of the five, probably either the Blue Jays, the Yankees, or Baltimore. Boston's a complete train wreck, and Tampa Bay has got so many people hurt. I can't see them coming through either, but.
It's true, and that's, I suppose, why we're talking about it. Why not the Jays would be my question, right?
They're, okay, they're playing an artificial turf. How long before their first baseman gets hurt? How long before the shortstop gets hurt again? How long before can Batista go the whole year? The Yankees, they don't have starting pitching. It's a mess, and they're old, too, so... It's a mess.
Yeah, it's a mess indeed. And it's a good point you make about how long is your first baseman going to go. I mean, they've really wanted Edwin Encarnacion to be able to have some days at DH and not play regularly at first base. That hasn't been able to happen because Jose's been injured. And how long can Jose go? Well, he's missed some time. So as for Reyes, he's already done a stint on the DL with, the fractured rib? And so, Jose Reyes, he's just brittle. He's injury prone. Well, yeah, there's a history of injuries there, but I don't know that when you get hit in the rib by a pitch that's the sign of someone injured. That might just be fluky itself. Don't know. Rocky and Markham, how are you?
I'm good, thank you. How about you?
My hands are in the air. I can't figure out this AL East. Can you help me?
I could give it a try. Let's see. The Blue Jays, I really believe that the team is starting to get healthy a little bit. Only my concern is their outfield. I would like to see Batista go back to the outfield because without him playing outfield, this is where it messes up. Because I think Justin Smoke's a really good hitter and a great defender. And Jose Reyes, it's great that he's back. I would like to see Devin Travis get back. They say he's going to be back by June 1st. My main concern is the bullpen right now at this moment because it's having its ups and downs. Like the only consistent player that's been really good from the bullpen is Roberto Osuna, and he's only 20 years old. Delabar has been good too. Hendricks has been good too, but I still have my concerns there because they did blow up a lot of games. And if they didn't blow it up, I think they would have been first place by now. So I think this team has a chance to start picking up. I think this team is going to start rolling up pretty soon, starting in June. So I think this team could be a first place team.
Yeah, I certainly think they could, and I think the whole point today is that all five of these teams could be first place teams if everything goes right. And not everything's going to go right for all these teams, but someone has to win this division. So all those years of cursing the AL East, and boy, if the Blue Jays played the AL Central, boy, we'd be a playoff team, the stupid Yankees, damn Red Sox. Well, that's not the conversation this year. Colin and Milton, say, what say you regarding the AL East?
So it's an absolute train wreck, without question. Tampa Bay and Boston are, without question, they've got recaps to make up to get in back in the race, but that's the good thing about the AL East. You're never actually out of the race. It's a three-horse race between Baltimore's at the top, and then the Jays and the Yankees are fighting it out for second and third. I don't think anybody's out of the mix because of the nature of you beat up on each other. My question is more around the Jays and their rotation. We talk about Batista and Encarnacion playing on the turf, as I heard one of the callers say before. Why have we not tried Batista at first base yet? I mean, all you have to do at first is catch the ball, which he can do.
You need to throw it occasionally. It's not exclusively catching. I mean, there's all kinds of times with runners on, a ball to first base, you're going to have to throw it across the diamond, and that seems to be where the issue of the shoulders popped up, throwing the ball, not catching it.
100%, but at least it gives Encarnacion those days off. It's good to see that Navarro's making his way back, and it's really nice to see the pitching coming around. You know, Hutchinson having some good outings. Alex getting some good outings in there as well. Too bad for Dickey the last couple of times he's been roughed up, but he's still stuck in and managed to pitch at least six or seven innings. The bullpen for me continues to be a major concern. I don't trust Aaron Loop. There's not a guy in that bullpen that I trust with a three-run lead, which is a major concern if you're in the AL East because every team is a bomber team. So, you know, you get a guy on or two guys on and you're up two runs. That bullpen comes in and you're hoping it secure the lead. There is no lead that is secure with our bullpen.
Yeah, unless you're playing Tampa. I mean, that's the only lineup that really doesn't have a ton of pop. All the others have all kinds of home run power. You're right. Let's go to Shane in Toronto. Shane, how are you?
Not bad. Thanks for taking my call. I don't think this division is going to be decided by pitching or by batting. I think this division is going to be decided by the front office and whatever team can step up and fill some of the gaps they need, whether it's Tampa going out and acquiring a bat, whether it's the Yankees going out acquiring an arm or the Blue Jays. And unfortunately, Anthopoulos has never shown yet the ability to make a big in-season acquisition. All his big moves seem to happen in the the off-season, the winter meetings or the a free agent signing. And I think whatever team, the front office can step up and address their needs the best is obviously going to be the team that's going to pull away from the pack. And as a Jay fan, I can't help but be a little worried about that. That, you know, I don't know Anthopoulos' track record of being able to do that. He hasn't shown me, he hasn't shown us in the past that he can step forward when and make that big deal.
It's an interesting point because a lot of the big moves do come in the offseason, but I don't know if that's just Blue Jay specific. It's tough to make a move in the middle of the season. It seems to be harder.
It is definitely harder, but, you know, teams are able to do it. You look at the Red Sox, they've gone out and, you know, they acquired a couple of big trades last year with the bats, with Cespedes. Obviously, Tampa Bay made some moves with Price. You know, the teams, when you're this close, is that one or two bats or one or two players, whatever your team needs, is going to be the difference between pulling away from this division or not. And, you know, I think Anthopoulos has got to step up and be creative. Maybe not. I'm not saying sell the farm. I'm not saying give away, you know, a Sanchez or a Norris. But there are ways of acquiring the bat. You look at the Jays, the World Series team. They went out and got a Candy Maldonado, who was a bit part player, and he fit in perfectly. And he was that missing piece. He was that is a minor deal, but it was a big impact upon a club. And that's where, you look at the Jays' past, Juan Francisco, some of those lesser lights, they're the stopgap measures. They're buying a lottery ticket hoping that they catch lightning in a bottle with these guys.
Yeah, well, you're right. And Colabello's been that guy for them this year. Thanks for the call, Shane. You make a great point. Imagine if this roster adds a legit starter. The return of Daniel Norris may not happen. It sounds like it will at some point if he gets back on track. But can you count on Daniel Norris to give you six and a half innings? I don't know that you can necessarily say, even if he's looking great in Buffalo, that he's going to come up and replicate that at the major league level. If you were to be able to add an arm, someone that has a history of being a major league starting pitcher, think about the ripple effects of that through the lineup. Estrada can go back to the bullpen. There's another arm that helps a bullpen that struggled. Now Daniel Norris, if he's looking good, you don't have to throw him back into the starting rotation. Maybe he can come in and be a bullpen guy. He worked for Aaron Sanchez last summer. A lot easier, well, maybe not a lot easier, but very different being a starter than being a bullpen guy, especially as if you're a youngster, a little less to worry about, not as much time to think about things. Maybe focus on one or two pitches, not the entire arsenal. So one arm added to this team really would go a long way. And they still do have some spare parts. I mean, if Macer is tourist gets healthy and Deonor Navarro gets healthy, could you not package those up and add an arm? You probably have to add more than that. You do. And I wonder if it's not... a guy like Max Pentecost is interesting. He's what, the second of two first-rounders they took last year? Prospect that's obviously highly touted, top 15 pick. They've got Russell Martin locked up forever. They still have AJ Jimenez, double-A, triple-A sort of split time there with Tolle coming up. I think he's now in triple-A. Maybe that's a prospect you could package with another part or two, and you could get a starting arm. But it just seems to be you have to wait later in the year because no one wants to declare themselves out of it yet. Also, waiting later in the year is helpful for you because you're not paying as much of the salary of the guy coming in. Let us go to Mike in Etobicoke. Mike, how are you?
Very good. And you?
I'm still very well, sir.
Good stuff. I still have a little bit of faith in the Blue Jays. I think we've got the talent. We've got the tools. And as you say, you know, little bits that are about to happen. If Jose goes back in the right field, Smoke begins to play on first base. And now, does our bullpen worry me? Yes, like the previous caller. Air Loop is not the guy. We may need to move a few of the young fellas like Daniel Norris. What's happened to this pitcher that was to come to us he was going to work out for a couple of months, and we were going to sign him around the middle of May. I can't think of his name, but he's a veteran.
Are you thinking of Johan Santana?
Yes.
Yeah. You know what? That's not going to be quick. There's some major injury history there, and I wouldn't suggest that that's a guarantee that he'll ever play in the majors again, never mind this year with the Jays. So that's more of a pipe dream. Yeah. But if it happens, it'd be great, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it would. Really would.
Well, we'll see. Thanks for the call, Mike. You can see it's as soon as you start talking about it, it gets back to the arms with this Toronto team because you know they're going to score enough runs. They are. The last two games are a perfect example of it. Their arms were not good against Chicago on Tuesday, the night game. Okay start from Dickey, not sensational. Defense wasn't sharp. Runs come on the board that probably shouldn't. The bullpen, mediocre, can't handle leads. 2-3 times they gave the lead right back, and yet there the offense was again, bailing them out. What was it, 3 in the bottom of the ninth, the Donaldson walk-off? So that's it. They're an arm or two away from really looking like the clear-cut favorite in the division in my mind, and yet that's probably what Yankee fans are saying about the return of Tanaka, which sounds like is going to happen very soon. We'll turn our attention to Quebec City and a man who loves junior hockey more than you and I combined. It's an interesting tournament, and we will see for the ninth time tonight since May 5th, Rimouski and Quebec City. I cannot wait. That's coming up next on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Go here, there, and everywhere with Jeff Blair. Subscribe to podcasts of The Jeff Blair Show at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher, Sportsnet 590, The Fan, on demand. Now more of The Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
All eyes on Quebec City tonight as the Memorial Cup will have center stage. It's an off day for the Blue Jays. They're heading to Minnesota. 3 against the Twins. They get a 3-game National League set. Ah, interleague play. Everyone's favorite. Except when it's not their favorite. And then back home for 3 against Houston and Miami. So we might get time for Jay's calls later on, but all eyes on the Memorial Cup because we've got off nights before 2 Game 7s in the NHL. Boy, what if we do? This is like Santa Claus has come down the chimney and delivered no coal. We've been good children all year. We're getting 2 Game 7s. I know one gentleman who will be enthused about it is our next guest, Peter Labardius, the color voice of the Calgary Flames, also the most enthusiastic junior hockey supporter I've met on planet Earth. How are you, Mr. Labardius?
I'm good, Mr. Pinder. How are you?
Oh, I'm great. We catch a little matinee at the ballpark yesterday. Got time to watch the Memorial Cup tonight. I thought it'd be a great time to bring you on.
Well, that was a good way to spend a Wednesday for absolute sure. And despite the great efforts of Josh Donaldson again, not quite good enough.
Isn't he unbelievable?
Ooh, wow. I'm not sure they realized that they were going to get quite that out of him. And the last time I checked, we're not even through the month of May. So this guy's off to an incredible beginning.
This will be the ninth meeting tonight between the two QMJHL finalists. Is this good or bad in a Memorial Cup? Because this tournament sometimes lacks rivalry or at least hatred for each other. This certainly will not be short on that tonight.
If I am not mistaken, Ryan, this would be meeting number 16 of the season.
Wow.
Between these two. Because don't forget, the proximity of those two places is like 2 hours and 45 minutes away. So I'm sure I heard yesterday that tonight will be their 16th meeting. It's fascinating. The Quebec League final probably goes down in history as one of the best of all time with Game 6, you know, going to overtime and then Rimouski wins at home, the only home team to win in that series in overtime. And here we are again for an opportunity to move on. The question mark for me is the health of Anthony Duclair, who went down with an injury last night. It did not look good. It looked like he hurt his shoulder, hurt his elbow, hurt his forearm, and did not return. I think they go right back to Zach Fucali, and that despite the fact that, you know, he gave up a 4 spot last night, and I think more than anything that Philippe Boucher was just trying to change the momentum, but it'll be a great night at the old Coliseum. Looking forward to getting in there tomorrow. I'm going to take in the final two games just because, you know, I can't be quite this close and not do it. So I'm going to do it. And yeah, from a rivalry standpoint, I don't know what more you could ask for. I guarantee you after tonight, they'd be quite happy to never see one another again.
At least until the fall. Why do you like this tournament so much? Because I got to be honest, sometimes these round robins after 2 months of best of seven series, it doesn't do it for me.
Well, I understand that. And you know what? This is a tournament, this is a championship that is so near and dear to my heart. And yet, you know, after watching it religiously since 1974, which I have, certainly the final for a long time, you know, even when you're of my age, when you're of your age, Mr. Pinder, it seems like every game in this tournament has been on. But that wasn't the case in the old days. You only got the final for a long, long time. I love the event. I was lucky enough to broadcast eight of them. It's near and dear to me, but is the format perfect? No. A matter of fact, I thought about it before our call today. The one thing I would potentially change, and it probably wouldn't make any difference to you or anybody else, is the fact that I might go in this tournament to almost a little bit of a, and this might not resonate with people here, but a curling page type format for the playoffs, where you would probably reward the number one and two seed after the round robin. Because you take a look at Oshawa's situation, and they've been the best team in this tournament. I think that'd be hard to argue. But they won't have played from Tuesday to Sunday. That's a long time in between. And since they changed that format back in the year 2006, it's almost been a tie right down the middle as to whether that advantage goes to the first place finishing team. Whereas prior to 2006, there was a huge percentage in terms of winning the final if you were lucky enough to win the round robin. So I'm going to throw this back at you. I love it when people say it doesn't grab them, but then my next question is, what do you do?
Yeah, no, it's a conundrum. And I think the problem is that you've got league finals, which, you know, should be the cherry on top of, you know, the ultimate, the pinnacle. And then you go reset and play round robins. I don't know that if you're going to do a national championship, there isn't going to be a way to pick holes in it, because you're going to have unfamiliar opponents in, you know, foreign territory for a lot of the teams.
Yeah, and I don't disagree with that point. And that's why, you know, I always like to throw that back at people, because, you know, maybe there's some people who would suggest, we don't need a national champion. Maybe we don't need one. I personally still think, you know, that we absolutely need one. But on the other hand, I don't think there's any perfect format in terms of trying, you know, to decide a winner. In some ways, it would be great if there were four leagues throughout the country, and then you could get there and maybe you could have, you know, you play 9 or 10 games in this tournament anyway. You could maybe come up with, you know, best of threes.
Sure.
And determine a champion that way. And I think, you know, there'd be a lot of people that would go for that. But the fact of the matter is, at this point in time, that's not happening. You know, it's a money event. It's a sponsor event. And they continue to try and do the best. So, you know, we'll see. But I always think it's a good discussion, Ry, because you always want to try and make things better. And the one thing about this tournament that frustrates the daylights out of me, but there's not a whole lot you can do about it, is especially right now with what's going on in the National Hockey League, it's hard to win.
Yeah.
It's hard to get the proper attention and notice. It just is. And to me, it's more that way in today's society than it's ever been before.
Yeah, I'd agree. I think no matter where you are in Canada, you're going to get a lot of NHL hockey. It wasn't always the case. And if you're in a market that has a CHL team, that was going to be the league that you loved and the stars that you idolized. It's a lot different now. We can watch games on our phones. It's crazy.
It is for sure.
Tell me, is it just me, Or is this a group of older teams than we usually see? Or maybe it was just spoiled a few years ago when I watched Seth Jones and Jonathan Drouin and Nathan McKinnon go head-to-head in the final along with a whole host of other young draft-eligible prospects. I think there might only be one kid that could go in the first round that's playing in this tournament.
Well, Nick Merkley would be that guy, and he's had a really good tournament, and he is a right winger with the Kelowna Rockets for those people who aren't familiar. And he's an interesting story because for me personally, I've been watching him since he was a Bantam in his final year of Bantam in Calgary, and I love the kid. To me, he's a winner, and I'm fascinated as to where he's going to go in round number one. No, you were spoiled. you absolutely were spoiled. I was there for the whole thing. You don't find in this tournament very often teams that are loaded with high NHL, top picks. And that year in Saskatoon was a bit of an epiphany with, all those players, Horvat and Domi and Drouin and, Nathan McKinnon, and you talked about Seth Jones. So, you take a look at how that draft unfolded to have all those top guys. You have to be lucky because, the Memorial Cup in its own right isn't unlike what you see most of the time at the World Junior, where, those teams, the World Junior for many, and to me, I think it probably always will be, by and large, it's a 19-year-old tournament. And the Memorial Cup is basically a 19 and 20-year-old tournament. I mean, you win with older players. And that, if you go back in history, that's the case more often than not.
I know a lot of people curious about the big, strong, third-line sort of center in terms of what he might pan out to be in the NHL. Gauthier, the draft pick of the Leafs, how's he look to you?
He's been okay, just okay for me. I liked him at the World Junior quite a bit, was lucky enough to attend the last two games that Canada played here in Toronto. There's still some work to be done in terms of his foot speed. I like his face-offs. I like his awareness. I like his understanding of the game. But it's a work in progress. And I would guess that, it's all about continuing to work on his foot speed at a time where, Ryan, we were lucky enough to watch the game a lot where we hang our hat on a regular basis. And, I watch a ton of NHL games with my own two eyes, obviously, in my position. And, the game's never been faster. So foot speed to me with him is a bit of a concern. I think it's going to take some seasoning. But he really fits a very nice mold in terms of exactly what you talked about, what you might be looking for out of a third line center, because he's got great size, and like I said, he's highly intelligent, wins faceoffs, and has a great big body.
You've watched a lot of the Anaheim Ducks this spring, and when you alluded to it earlier, you covered the series between the Flames and the Ducks. Have you seen a team as deep, skilled, and physical in the NHL before?
I have, but you have to go back a ways, and yet is it even going to be good enough for this group?
Yeah.
And is it necessarily their time? I think, as I've said a lot this spring, the addition of Ryan Kesler has made all the difference in the world. The 1-2 punch that it's given them. But I think, as more people, I think, have watched the Ducks, especially in this just phenomenal series of hockey, I mean, the sport, to me, just hasn't really gotten much better than what I've seen in the last two respective Western Conference finals. The thing that impresses me the most in many ways about Anaheim, and I'm not taking anything away from Kesler, Getzlaff, Perry, those are great people, but the emergence of Silverberg and Bolesky, but more importantly, what stays with me, Rye, is this: the emerging group of young people on the back for that team. That's where, to me, the Ducks have gone from, like, really good to, who knows, maybe Stanley Cup champions when it's all said and done. I just think Fowler, Vatanen, Lindholm's a superstar. He's going to be an absolute superstar. And then you've got, Frankie Beauchemin, who's the glue guy back there, the veteran, the leader that just kind of, keeps it all together. So I've been really, really impressed with them. And yet, and I'm not a betting man and never have been, thank goodness, But I always have a tough time going up against those two guys in Chicago that wear 19 and 88.
Yeah, and two's been pretty darn good, too. It really is like the heart of the lion against maybe a more skilled group. I don't even want to say more skilled, but a deeper team against guys that just seem to finish. It's going to be stunning.
Well, I think it's just really two contrasting styles. I mean, when the Ducks get below your hash marks, I don't care who you are, you got a problem.
Yeah.
And you've got a big problem. But the Hawks are terrific in transition. And, you know, again, the one guy in so many ways, well, two guys, Seabrook and Keith, these guys are winners. And the pounding and the amount of ice time that Keith has had, and yet there he is last night making all the plays, three assists, saves the game-tying goal. I think we're really lucky in hockey. I think we really are, because it's a spectacular era of some incredible performers when the game is the most difficult to play and means the most.
Well, you got a big weekend ahead, sir. Enjoy Quebec City, squeeze in those two game sevens, and look forward to catching up with you when it's all said and done.
All the best. Thanks for having me.
That is Peter Labardius, Sportsnet color commentator for the Calgary Flames. He's also at the Memorial Cup again. He lives there, it seems. Every year he will be there. And you know he'll be watching those two Game 7s coming up Friday and Saturday. When we return, a little more talk about Leafs prospects and exactly where they go at number four. Also, what are they doing with GM? We'll ask Damian Cox on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.